MarineCorpsMustang.org, or you can find them on Facebook. Go ahead and like them there. Most importantly, join their association and help them continue the great work that they do. That's the Marine Corps Mustang Association. Join it today.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner, proven and dependable.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Not a test. This is rock and roll. Time to rock it from the Delta to the DMZ. Is that me or does that sound like an Elvis Presley movie? Viva Da Nang. Oh, Viva Da Nang. Da Nang me, why don't they get a rope and hang me? Hey, is it a little too early for being that loud? Hey, too late. It's 0600. What's the O stand for? Oh, my God, it's early.
.803 on the second day of June in 2017. Joining me is the official All Marine Radio head chef, Kim Holmes. Hey, Kim.
Yes.
All Marine Radio turns 1 year old today.
Happy birthday, Max. Way to go. It's been that long. Fantastic. Yeah. Seems like a few weeks to me.
How about that? A year old.
A year old and growing, I'm sure.
Exactly. No, it's been an interesting year. That's been awesome, and you've been a part of it the whole time. So wanted to thank you for coming on and sharing your gifts. I know I've got a lot of friends that that were trading zucchini pictures last Friday. In fact, Rudy, who is just on, the guys that come on this program are all foodies, much more than I am. Rudy's a cook, and he was sending zucchini pictures last weekend. And then Montana Man, he's a foodie. I think he's a foodie because he's an eater, more than he likes to cook, but he likes to eat. So Montana Man, and so is the Gunner. He's a big time foodie. So
Gunner's a foodie. Well, you know they are. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, they were trading zucchini pictures last weekend, and I think Rudy screwed it up because he didn't do my recipe anyway. My recipe calls for a little bit of fresh Parmesan cheese on the zucchini when you put them on. I think he just did a little bit of olive oil and salt and pepper and threw them on the grill, which is acceptable, but there's better ways to do it, in my opinion.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Matt.
You got a lot of stuff going on. What is, what's helpful?
Yeah, that was just, somebody calling to talk to Beth, and I just let it record.
There you go.
I didn't answer the phone. I don't do that shit. I mean that stuff.
Yeah.
I ride one horse at a time, baby.
Too much technology, not good?
Well, no, it's I'm adapting, kicking and screaming, but it is good. The technology is great, actually. But I'm a little slow out of the gate.
Well, you're working on conquering that cell phone.
Yeah. Well, I'm doing all right with that, Computers, man.
I wanted to talk about something serious before we talk about food. We were talking about Memorial Day. Kim, you know, last week sent me a nice note, you know, thanks for your service. And I said, whoa. Memorial Day is not about service. It's about sacrifice.
It is about sacrifice, and thank you for that heads up on that. I apologize.
No. What I want to say is, you know, Kim's dad flew C-47s in the Normandy invasion and in the European campaign from, 1940. 1944 when we started at Normandy, and then all the way through the end of the war in 1945,
he started before 44. He was doing work over there and hauling supplies and stuff. I think he 43 or 40, early 44. Yeah,
but. A car accident takes him from your family, right? So you,
right.
Until your stepdad comes into your life, you lost the hero of your family. You lost your father, and then that's a huge hole for a family. And you were what, six when it happened?
Six and a half, yeah.
Yeah. What was that like? Do you remember? Do you remember when? Where were you?
I do remember. My uncle, I was at a day school, daycare kind of thing back then in the 50s. My uncle Steve, who was in the car, he was a midshipman, and they were taking him back to Annapolis on Thanksgiving Day. My mother was pregnant with my little brother, and I had a younger sister and then me. But I have some good memories of my dad, when my uncle came and told me, I broke up, and it was hard to deal with. It affected me for a while. But I had great uncles that stepped in until my mom remarried a few years later. And then I got lucky with a stepfather. My mother let him be my dad and didn't micromanage his parenting skills.
Mm-hmm.
And so thanks to him, he butched me up real quick. And taught me baseball and sports and was a major factor in my future life. But, you know, I remember flying in a biplane, with my dad, a Piper Club Cub with the cloth, skin.
When you were a little guy?
When I was a little guy before he died.
Wow.
And I remember sitting on a stool in our house and watching him cook duck. He was a foodie. And that's a memory. And I remember watching him play basketball at the Armory. And I remember going to see Peter Pan on Broadway when I was 6 years old with Mary Martin, who was Larry Hagman,
Mary Martin. Mary Martin played that role forever.
Yes, she was attached to that wire springing around. And that's why people say, you don't look so old, I'm 73 now. And my comment, because of that, going to see Peter Pan, I says, well, I'm still tight with Peter Pan, And I remember, as sure as I'm sitting here, when Tinkerbell is dying and Peter Pan hollers, do you believe in fairies? And we all said, yeah, the whole crowd of kids, yes, we believe in fairies. Well, don't know how that would go over today, but God, it was so cool. But I don't have a lot of memories of them. I have the first hand-carved toys from him, two horses that he gave me. I still have those. But
I just wanted in a public way, we lose people a lot of different ways. But it's that loss, Kim, and that hole that you can't fill. And I mean, and honestly, you're lucky, in terms of that you had another man slide into your life and assume that role and be, a great influence in your life. And not everybody has that. But it's that loss. On Memorial Day, guys like your dad who climbed into the, and again, until I, you can kind of try to imagine what that's like, but I think, when you watch Band of Brothers and you see.
Yeah, I watched it on Memorial Day, by the way.
Oh, you did? Yeah.
Yes, I did.
But you know what? Again, you look at that and you see those guys, some of them in their soft covers with their headsets on, some of them wearing helmets. In those planes, right, flying over France and the AC-AC that was, the air defense artillery that was exploding around them and their attempts to, to dodge it, to move around it and all that kind of stuff. But, no, it was, those guys were men, straight up men. But again, it's on Memorial Day, it's that loss. And again, when we don't educate our kids, when the population isn't as educated, they don't understand what a Gold Star family is. Okay?
No.
They don't understand what a Gold Star son is. They don't understand what a Gold Star sister is. And which means they can't reach out to them and support them. And they need love and support because they need to know that sacrifice meant something. And the rest of us appreciate it. And so that's why, to me, the significance of Memorial Day can never get lost on the population. And then the cherry on top is, as I've said for the last week, kind of Lincoln's admonition in the Gettysburg Address. And that is, it is for us the living to rededicate ourselves to our community, and I'm bastardizing this, but to our communities, And to this nation, and that is food to the food bank, clothes to the homeless shelter, and then volunteer in your community. That's what makes this a great country, right? And so,
that's
where it starts. And so I think understanding it gets us on a series of being sensitive to the sacrifice and also what does that sacrifice means to me, and what that means to me is I've got to contribute. And so I just wanted to recognize the sacrifice your family made. And I know your father wasn't killed in combat, but your dad's a war hero, straight up war hero. And his loss to your family was just the same, whether it had been happened in Europe or happened on the road to Annapolis. So anyway, just wanted to publicly discuss that.
With the flak going off in Normandy, for example, he lost co-pilots. How God watched over him.
Yeah.
Planes coming back. They didn't have any armament. They had a .45, big deal, and holes in the side of their plane. They drop their parachutes and head back and patch it up and reload and do it again. And they did that for a few days. It was pretty amazing to hear the stories, to see a Band of Brothers, and every once in a while, I'll pull out his leather helmet, and God, he had a small head.
you have a big head, bud. Just for the record.
I think I do.
Jim is like, he's got the Tatanka going. He is not a small-headed dude.
No, I'm a Neanderthal, but and I still have his flight logs and all that stuff. So it's pretty cool.
Awesome, awesome. All right, let's talk a little bit about let's talk about food. I wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, you and I had a conversation, I don't know if it's last week or the week before, about food safety. And we just got into talking about health inspections and things like that, and it made me want to talk about, you know, a lot of times now we're going camping and we'll grill outside and food doesn't always get treated in the appropriate way. Sometimes people get sick and things like that. So I wanted to talk about that a little bit, some advice for people now that summer grilling, camping, and gets going and some things that they need to make sure that they do. I don't know how that popped into my head, but it just did. So let's talk about that. Are there things that when you do grill, that basic health things that you ought to be doing?
Yes. You remember this mantra. Hot foods hot, cold foods cold. Now, cold food is anything under 46 degrees. Hot foods, anything over, you have to keep them around 60 degrees minimum if they're just resting. And if it gets below that, it'll spoil. And the way you eat steaks, they don't have a chance to get cool. And the way I eat steaks, or even hot dogs, they're never going to get cold on us. But if you have a picnic and you're outdoors camping or just a picnic in the backyard, you have food sitting out on the table, you have to be very aware of the food temperatures, and you have to keep them covered, whether it's with foil or some kind of, they have these tops that are kind of like mesh.
Right.
To keep the bugs off. Mosquitoes, flies, you know, they carry all kinds of disease, so you have to be cautious of that. And I think the biggest message I can give is make sure when you have, you're carrying your meat, or let's stick with meat right now. I want to get to other stuff, but when you're carrying the meat, before you cook it, you keep it in the cooler. And you make sure, whether it's you have ice packs or you have ice that you're going to put in drinks, and you have trays that you put your food in the cooler, and then you can get these ice packs that you can keep in your freezer that you can put on top of the food, because people open the lids of coolers, and you don't want that heat to come in and spoil the food from the top. And so it's real important that you have plenty of ice chests or coolers, and they have some high-tech coolers now, and gosh, I can't remember who they're made by, big-time company that will keep ice for 3 days. Now, these coolers can go up. They can go up to 500, 600, 700, 800 bucks. There are these thermal coolers. They're soft sides and stuff. Chad Kaya, who you know, has one, and he's got a small one. And he took a trip on a water craft. What do they call those? And from
pontoon
jet ski, a jet ski, but a big version of a jet ski where you're sitting down. And he went from Florida to the Bahamas, and they did it straight in one day. It's only 80 miles, but it's still, that's a hell of a trip. And but he had one of these small coolers with ice in it.
We're losing your voice. You got to put your mouth in the.
Okay.
There you go.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay. But anyway, they have these coolers, and then you have your regular Coleman ice chests that are even more energy efficient and more tight, airtight. So whatever you can do, you do. Now, that's the meat part of it. Now, when you have a picnic or you're going camping and you say you make up some potato salad, macaroni salad, something like that, you better keep that really cool, because that goes, when you see, you go to a backyard picnic and you'll see all this beautiful food out on the table. And yes, they just pulled it out of the fridge, out of the house. They brought it out. They set it on the picnic tables. And within an hour, all the mayonnaise-based dishes will go bad. Now, you can solve that problem by double bowl, having one bowl with ice and sitting your mayonnaise-based salads in that, in another bowl, sitting it right on those ice, the crushed ice or cubes, and then putting a little plastic top or something, because most bowls will have a plastic cover to put them on. And when they're not helping themselves, they put the lid back on. That'll give you another hour or so of the safety and sanitation. But that's when people get hurt, is they get food poisoning by eating cold foods that go above 40 degrees, and they spoil in more than the meat even. So just remember that.
It seems like mayonnaise seems to be involved in a lot of the stuff that I read about in the summer. Yay?
Yes. Yes, it is. And that's the big villain. And that's just the way it is, because mayonnaise in a macaroni or potato salad or coleslaw is pretty essential for a picnic. And that's just the way it is. Now, I make a potato salad with an oil and vinegar dressing. And when I do my potatoes, I pull them out of the water. I drain them. I chop them up. Or if you cook them in pieces, then you drain them. And then you have in a bowl your the herbs you're going to use. Olive oil and a little vinegar or lemon juice, whatever you want. And then you toss that, the potatoes in that. And the warm potatoes suck that flavor of all the herbs and the oils and vinegar or lemon juice into the potatoes. So it flavors that right away. And that's another way you can do it. And then you add whatever you're going to put in your potato salad. But you also have to be careful if you put eggs in a potato salad, even if it's not mayonnaise, you have to be careful about the egg spoil. Okay?
Got it. Talking kind of grilling, safety stuff. The, email for you, Kim.
Yeah.
Mac, would you ask Kim about treating the surface of the grill? I know a lot of us, and I'm guilty of this as I read it. We take a nasty cleaner and smear what's already on the grill all over it. Is that healthy? Should we clean it? So,
hell yes.
What do we do? Most grills don't get cleaned, and I'm just considering this right now, listening to this conversation. Most grills don't get cleaned during the course of the summer. I've heard Kim talk about how he shuts his propane grill down by turning it very high when he's done. But if you're a charcoal person, you don't have that. And certainly if you're camping, although some people take propane with them, a lot of people rely on charcoal again at campsites. Just thoughts on cleaning a grill. So, Kim?
Okay. When you get your food off the grill, whether it's a campsite or a gas grill, if you take it off a campfire grill or a Weber, you put the lid on and you let it get hot as it can get with the lid on. Then you take it off and you can go ahead and have your picnic and stuff. But the thing is, you have to take a wire brush, and it has to be a wire brush. Now, I have this brush that's about 8 inches wide. It's made with brass brushes, and it's on about a 2-foot stick with a scraper on one end and this massive brush on the other. And, man, I reef on that gas grill, and I turn it high for 15 minutes, and then I open it up, and I shut, then I scrape the heck out of that grill with this brush. And you can use just a regular wire brush with paint, but this 2-foot stick ensures that you won't burn your hands. And when you're working with this anyway, you wear grill gloves. And you can get them at any hardware store or place where you buy grills. And they're kind of like fireproof for a while to get your hand out of the heat. But if you don't use those, you can get hurt too. But you crank that, you brush it, and then what I do is I'll take, and when people tell you you take a paper towel and wipe it with oil, BS. What you do is you take a dish towel that you don't need. You know, everybody has rags, T-shirts. You fold them up, you quarter it up so you've got a serious padding. You take olive oil or vegetable oil, and you pour it on the rag, and you have your grill glove on. You pour it on the rag, but it's not going on your grill glove. And then you wipe the grill grates with this oiled rag after you're done, and you've scraped it and brushed it, and then you shut the lid and turn it off. And then when you start your fire up your grill, whether it's gas or briquettes or charcoal, then you get it hot, you crank it up, and you take that same rag, you can fold it over, and you'll see you'll get black marks off of that. But you want to oil your grill at the end. And then when you get it hot, you want to oil a couple of times with fresh oil. And even when after 15 minutes it's turned on or the flame's burning under your Weber, and then you wipe that grill surface, and that prevents sticking and passing any food stuff on to the next person. But the exercise here is to have a clean grill all summer. Now, if you do those two things, you clean it after you're done, and then you wipe it with oil before you're done, you will have a absolutely fabulous surface, like good restaurants do, and then the food won't stick. And what I do is whatever I'm going to put on that grill, unless it's a hamburger or a hot dog, I will, like if it's a steak or a piece of fish, I will oil that. And oil that first, and that helps for it from sticking to the grates. Okay?
Okay, but so let me, I want to talk charcoal. Partly because I have a charcoal grill. Right, so at the end of my grilling, I can't turn the heat up. I can't turn
you
the heat up.
More,
I can what?
Yeah. You can throw some more briquettes on the coals and kind of reignite it and heat that grill up. You don't need to throw a lot of briquettes or charcoal on that grill, but you have embers, you have coal, and that'll fire that charcoal up real quick, and then you put the lid on, go about your business, and it'll get hot. So by the time you're finished with your meal and it's time to clean the grill, you go clean the grill. And you do just what I said to do with the wire brush.
Okay.
And then you'll be in the front row.
Okay, so. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. There's nothing worse and nothing more difficult to cook on a grill that has not been cleaned at the end. Now, I used to have to, you know, and on a Weber, for example, the grease strips below the grate kind of hangs there.
Right.
And if you have a good wire brush, you can get underneath on the side. You come from the side, but you have to have a glove on or you're going to burn yourself. And you can get that because it's all, it turns to charcoal if you have heat on it. And then it just turns gray and it's easy to get off. But if you just walk away from your Weber and, you wait until you heat it up next time, you're going to have food's going to just kind of stick to the grates and build up over the summer. And if my dad didn't do that, I had to get out with a Brillo pad and scrub the damn grill with hot water and soap and the Brillo pad before we used it again. Damn, go clean the grill. God. And, you know, this is preteen, but that was it. That was my job. I was the grill cleaner. And
I've got an email about that. And then we'll take a break. But here's a question. Mac, I'm curious, my grill, I don't throw charcoal in it when I'm done. I probably should. Yeah. It does develop rust. Is there any way that I can treat it so that it won't? Kim?
Yes. You oil it. That is how you prevent charcoal grills from getting rust. You oil it, you know, and you don't have to add more charcoal. Just when you pull everything off, put the lid on, close all the vents. Close the top vent and the bottom vent and let that heat build up as much as possible. Then you wire brush it and you clean it the best you can. And then you take that rag that you oiled at the first.
Right.
And then you put oil on it and then you wipe the oil and that'll keep it from rusting. And if you have a cover on a Weber, you cover it. Once it's cool, of course,
right.
And then it won't get rained on, and it won't turn the grates to rust. And the best grates to have are stainless steel. And if it's cast iron, then you're going to have to take real good care of oiling them before and after you use them.
Okay, but cast iron would be like any cast iron pipe you have, and pan that you have, and you've
like your cast iron skillet.
Right. You've explained how to season that, so your grill would be the same way. It's something that if you don't oil it after you use it, then obviously it's going to get rusty. You're going to have to knock the rust off that, clean the rust off, so you're not eating the rust.
That's right. Now, in the restaurant, I had cast iron skillets and stainless steel saute pans. And before it was aluminum, until I could afford stainless steel. But I've always had cast iron. And when I get done, I wipe it, rinse it with sudsy water and a soft brush and scrub it. And then you dry it. And then you take a little Crisco and a paper towel. And then you wipe the whole thing all over. Bottom side, top side, inside, everything, until not glop it on there, but just so it seals the cast iron and prepares it for the next use. It's the same principle as cleaning your grills.
Got it. All right, we have to take a break. You're listening to Amarin Radio here on our birthday, the second day of June, 2017.
That's so cool.
Exactly. So we're 1 year old today. We've become a single-digit midget from a fraction of a single-digit midget. So we're pretty fired up about that. So we're talking food here on a – and if you tuned in – you know, I put out a little blurb this morning that said we'll talk food in the 7 o'clock hour. We're going to talk F-18 stuff in the F-18 in the 8 o'clock hour. If you're tuning in, wondering where that is, just go to the podcast page right now because it's already posted to it. But the conversation we had about a F-18 crash and the investigation that was released here a little over a month ago is already posted to the podcast page. So if you're looking for that, you can find it there and listen to it now. But Kurt Knowles, our retired F-18 pilot, he's our F-18 explainer-in-chief, was gracious enough to hop on with us early this morning to explain some of the findings of the investigation. Kim gracious enough to flex and come on a little bit later. So that got shuffled a little bit on our birthday. So on our birthday, we're going to take a quick break. More of All Cooking Radio. Coming up next with the All Marine Radio head chef, Kim Holmes. This hour of All Marine Radio is brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug, home of the world-famous Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out. BattleMug.com.
My name is Juan Perez, Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold. Be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website. Look at what events they have lined up. Attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there. With folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines. All you Mustangs, listen up. The Marine Corps Mustang Association is comprised of Marine Corps officers and officers from other military services who share a common background. They are a group of men and women who initially enlisted and served with distinction in the Marine Corps and the Marine Corps Reserve Enlisted rank. The term Mustang refers to a commissioned or warrant officer who has risen from the enlisted ranks. The Marine Corps Mustang Association was founded by Captain Robert Richter, United States Marine Corps retired, in Philadelphia on 10 November 1985 as a nonprofit veteran service organization. In their 33rd year of existence, the association continues to dedicate itself to the advocacy of professional development and the encouragement of younger Marines, demonstrating a pathway for advancement and offering mentoring, advice, and camaraderie, over the course of their military service and civilian careers. The Marine Corps Mustang Association is looking for a few good Mustangs to join their association. Contact them via their website, MarineCorpsMustang.org. I say again, MarineCorpsMustang.org. Find them on Facebook. Go ahead and like them. Most importantly, join their association so that they can continue to do the great work that they've done for the past 33 years.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Marine Radio.
Maryland, baby. I remember seeing that.
Yeah, my favorite rendition of Happy Birthday, simply because would have loved to have had a microphone into the head of Peter Lawford, Frank Sinatra, who knew that the president was involved with this woman who put on that sequin dress and sang this song on that night and stunned the planet. Everybody was like, oh, she's so wonderful.
That wasn't a dress. That was the introduction to spray-on dresses.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me?
Oh,
Marilyn Monroe. Oh, my God. So, yeah, you wonder how, you know, you can imagine JFK kind of trying to sneak back in the White House that night, right? The plate comes.
Well, can you imagine his wife sitting right beside him?
Was she there? Was she there that night?
Yes, she was.
No, she was?
I'm pretty sure.
No, she
pretty
wasn't.
Sure. Okay.
Hold on. Let me see if I there's a picture of him when it's being sung. John Kennedy birthday, Madison Square Garden. Well, you would think that she would be at his birthday party.
Yeah.
I'm looking for images. Marilyn Monroe sings Happy Birthday to John Kennedy, and a photographer, that's a picture of her. Hold on, let me see if there's a picture of him in a typical black dark suit and a black dark tie. I think that was the uniform back then, yes?
Yep.
Was she there? Okay. There's a picture of the birthday. There's a picture. There's a picture. Big, big cake that night.
Yep.
I'm not seeing Jackie Kennedy. I'm seeing his sister. And so the jury's out. I don't know that she was, in fact, attending that night. So I'd have been moderately awkward. I guess it would have been better if she would have been there.
Well, I'm sure she was there. I'm pretty sure, but
well, if not, she sure as hell heard about it. No, she wasn't there. Here's a picture of him standing there, and he's standing there by himself, trying to lie. He's standing there trying to laugh.
Yeah, okay.
This is kind of funny. Not really, though. Yeah, so my favorite, as Omrin Radio turns 1 year old today. Here's another kind of interesting email, Kim.
Yes.
Mac, I'm listening to the program today. I had the occasion to accompany my wife on the long weekend to a store called the Container Store. I had no idea such a thing even existed. They have containers for containers in this place.
Yep, I'm sure they do.
And some of the containers for food were incredible.
Yeah.
Kim, have any guidance relative to, is he still an old-fashioned guy? Is Saran Wrap okay? Does it have to be in Tupperware? And to be honest with you, Tupperware looked obsolete in the store I was in. I was absolutely blown away by the number, types, and all the different materials used in terms of packaging stuff in your home, not only in your kitchen, but your home period. So, Kim, I've been in the Container Store out here, and it is astounding. Absolutely astounding. I mean, hell, even if you go into a Bed Bath & Beyond, it's pretty amazing to see the containers in that place. Is the Saran Wrap still okay? How did you do that? What is your preference?
Well, my preference is usually stainless steel bowls. I thought they were pretty deep. Or anything plastic, but you have to have lids. If you don't have lids, then you have to use foil or Saran Wrap. It's just the way it is. But now they make every kind of bowl and Tupperware. They have glass dishes like Tupperware with plastic lids that snap on. I saw one when I was in Arizona on my vacation. My niece had it. And I thought it was plastic, and that says, be careful, you're going to break that. I said, it's plastic. She says, no, you idiot. And the lid's plastic, but the container's glass. And I said, well, geez, I better get with the program. But, yeah, they have so many, everything has a top on it, pretty much, a snap-on. We have some stainless bowls with plastic tops that we like to use when we do anything around here, and we have people coming over for like a barbecue. We'll use those, or we have nice, you know, well, it's just in house here. We don't have a yard. We have a deck off our condo. So anyway, if what you have is Saran Wrap, you use it, but by doing so, you keep the coolness of whatever you have in your bowl there.
All right. All right. I'm with you. The next question. Hey, Mac, I'm grilling really thick. Tenderloin?
Yeah.
Does Kim have any guidance for me?
Grilling filet mignon.
Well, he calls it tenderloin. So,
well, and now tenderloins, that's where the filet mignon comes from. It's the tenderloin.
Okay,
and it comes in 5 to 8 pounds that starts big at one end and tapers down to a little tail at one end. And you cut your fillets, and like if they're 8 ounce, they're probably about 3 inches high. Anything bigger than that, I doubt if they are, maybe a 10 ounce or 12 ounce. But, again, just like we cook steak, how do you cook it? Well, with the tenderloin in the restaurant, I used to cook it in a cast iron skillet because I didn't have a grill. And then once I got a grill, I would start on one end and then flip it to the other end. And when you flip it, you only flip it once, but what you do is you sear it, you get cross grill marks and on both ends, and then you start cooking the sides. And you can, you just lay it down until all the sides are cooked. And when you cook a filet or a tenderloin, you know, it's cold in the center, but that cold draws the heat in. So that's, and of course you have, the digital thermometer. And if not, you have to use your thumb test, which is the easier your thumb goes into the steak, the rarer it is. The harder your thumb presses into the steak, the more well done it becomes. Okay?
Yeah, but don't use that. You got to be a pro to use that. Like Kim can use that, and he doesn't have any issue with it. But if you and I do that, it's going to suck, I promise you.
Okay. Yeah, you've got to use the thermostat.
If you don't have a thermostat, Kim, a lot of people will cut into a steak, because they don't want to serve it raw, they'll cut, you know, maybe halfway into a piece of meat, while they're cooking it, and to see if they're not sure, if they don't have a digital thermometer, and they're not comfortable that, you know, especially with thicker pieces. That as a cook, that's a little bit nerve wracking. You're not sure because, you know, normally you don't cook meat that thick. A lot of people will do that. Is that okay to do? Is that anything wrong with doing that?
Well, you cook it on one side when you flip it over and you're cooking it on the raw side and the upside is already cooked. And if you cut into the steak about halfway in, with a paring knife and peer in, you're going to lose juices.
Right.
So I don't recommend it. Now, if you don't have a digital thermometer, you do what I started Mac out on, is you can have a fork that has a thermostat in the handle, and you can stick that fork into your meat, and then you have a digital readout of the temperature, and it'll have on the handle rare, medium, well done temperatures. And of poultry, fish, pork, beef. So, but yes, you can cut into a steak after you flipped it and you've got the done side up. And just don't go all the way through because then all your juices are going to run right out into your grill.
Okay.
So,
but you know what? That makes sense because most of the people I know, they start from the edge. To include myself, you start from the edge and you cut to the middle, and then you lose all the juices.
Yes.
So what you're talking about is a small incision to see into the center of the steak without going through and through, which will lead you to lose juices.
Yes.
Ah.
And I have done that in the past before thermometers came into my life. And when I started cooking seriously, then there were meat thermometers that you carried in your chef coat, and you wiped it off every time you put it in the steak. When you put it back, they had a little pocket for it in your breast pocket or on your sleeve for your thermostat. And then you could just stick it right in and be done with it. But that's all I would say to do is make sure you don't cut all the way through. And then you can look in and you can see by the redness or the lack of it how well it's done. Okay?
You know what? That's really, I'm embarrassed to say, that's really smart. I never thought about that, about losing the juice and all the rest of that, but it, it's a certainly a more delicate way to check on. And again, most of the time, well, if you have a digital meat thermometer, it's easy. You don't have to do that. If you don't have one, then and you're cooking, I think a piece of meat that you're not comfortable with, and most of the time that would be a thicker piece of meat, in my opinion. And so you're just kind of in uncharted waters as a cook, that's a much, much better way, less intrusive way, to check whether it's done or not. Wow, I learned something today. I love that.
And what you do, Mac, is you take the thickest part of the steak and you get a paring knife. You know what a paring knife is? A little, you know, 3/4 inch blade or less, 1/2 inch blade. And then you get just a regular dinner fork. You make an incision about 1/2 inch long, and then you take the knife blade and the fork and you kind of peer in. And you don't go more than halfway, please. And then you'll see, and the juices will come up. You're going to lose a few, but it's the least obtrusive way to do it. Okay?
No, I got it. I got it. All right. Anything else? Any other tidbits you want to pass along?
Well, as far as food sanitation goes, do what we talked earlier, hot foods hot, cold foods cold. Keep things with mayonnaise on ice until you eat them. And when you're done eating them, you put them back on ice or back in the refrigerator if you're in near your home. But if you're out in a camper, you pulled it out of a ice chest, I'm sure, and everybody goes through it and you put it back, then you could get a couple of days out of that. Otherwise, if you let it sit out on the table for more than an hour, you're going to hurt somebody. You're going to get them sick with food poisoning.
Okay. All right. My thanks to for that kind of guidance, because a lot of people get out and don't have refrigerators, and so they make do. And I just wanted to go through some parameters relative to outdoor cooking, because Memorial Day weekend is one of the lines on the calendar relative to summer.
Yep.
and summer underway. So thank you, sir, for the visit.
My pleasure. And babies, boyfriends and girlfriends out there in Marine Land, we've got the 4th of July feast coming, baby. Oh, mercy.
All right. Thanks for the visit. I will talk to you in a bit.
Yep. Bye-bye. Thank you, Mac.
You bet. That is the one and only Kim Holmes. Yeah, I kind of bombed him. He sent me a really nice message, and I said, "Hey, man, not about me. It's about families like yours that lost a hero, and live with that, continue to live with that." So, never too old to learn. Never too old to learn. All right, we're gonna take a break. When we come back, the Gunner's supposed to join us, so we will find out what Mike's got going today on a Friday, the birthday. Coming up next. So, All Marine Radio continues. Don't touch that dial. All you Mustangs, listen up. The Marine Corps Mustang Association is comprised of Marine Corps officers and officers from other military services who share a common background. They are a group of men and women who initially enlisted and served with distinction in the Marine Corps and the Marine Corps Reserve Enlisted rank. The term Mustang refers to a commissioned or warrant officer who has risen from the enlisted ranks. The Marine Corps Mustang Association was founded by Captain Robert Richter, United States Marine Corps retired, in Philadelphia on 10 November 1985 as a nonprofit veteran service organization. In their 33rd year of existence, the association continues to dedicate itself to the advocacy of professional development and the encouragement of younger Marines, demonstrating a pathway for advancement and offering mentoring, advice, and camaraderie over the course of their military service and civilian careers. The Marine Corps Mustang Association is looking for a few good Mustangs to join their association. Contact them via their website, MarineCorpsMustang.org. I say again, MarineCorpsMustang.org. Find them on Facebook. Go ahead and like them. Most importantly, join their association so that they can continue to do the great work that they've done for the past 33 years.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner, proven and dependable.
Are you looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military? For a first responder? For a hunter? For an outdoorsman? Or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you. The Battle Mug. Starts as 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. Put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event. Farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out. BattleMug.com.
My name is Juan Perez Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly the special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure out of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there. With folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.